simple little things. All I want are simple little things. All I need is someone beside me to have and to hold, someone to love me as we grow older.
And welcome back to the Roundtable on just a beautiful Friday morning, 14 minutes after 9 o'clock, and Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue today. It's our Roundtable panel, and we just heard a little Audra McDonald. From her new album, Sing Happy, Audra will be with the Boston Pops at Tanglewood on Sunday at 2:30 p.m. The panel today, I'm pleased to report, is a competent one. We have...
just competent?
Siena, moderately so.
Siena Economics Professor Aaron Pasitti is here. Judith Enck is here. Rich Honan and Alan Shartok. And you can always join in the conversation, if you keep it brief, by emailing us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And, Alan, we have a little news.
Yes, we do. And we're all in on it, but... Because WAMC does what it does, and Judith Enck just said it's a really wonderful thing, join us live for a broadcast of the Roundtable panel at the Linda, Separating Children and the U.S.-Mexican Border, at the U.S.-Mexican Border, a WAMC community conversation. That's Wednesday, June 26th at 8:30 p.m.
A.M.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
so right. Right. You're always up on the details, yeah. aren't you? 8:30 a.m.
That's right.
You're terrific.
Okay.
That's 339 Central Avenue, Albany, New York. Okay, so it's 2 hours, and the hosts and panelists will be in conversation on separating children in the U.S.-Mexican border. I'll be there. Joe Donahue will host. Audience members will have the opportunity to ask questions and learn more. Tickets are free.
Right.
But you have to register on Eventbrite.
Eventbrite.
It says here, even. Oh, you're right.
Right.
Well, even.
It's a thing.
Ray was definitely right when he said a competent panel.
It's relatively so.
So you got 90% of the letters right.
I don't mean to interrupt, but people right. know it is Eventbrite.
Eventbrite.
You're but so, continue.
Judith right. is right. It is.
So
a thing.
I'm making my share of the mistakes
That's
this morning.
Okay.
Is it?
And
yes,
it's only 9:15.
There will not be any physical tickets for this event. Your name will be on our will call list at the door the morning of the event, which is why you have to be there by 8:30.
And remember, it's only a couple of hundred people capacity, so you want to It'll, move quickly.
These tickets will go in a second and a half.
Right. And the doors open at 8:30, and the actual program begins at 9. So it'll go 9 to 11.
Yes. What are you looking at?
Nothing. No. Nothing.
So you go to the WAMC website to register.
Correct, Judith. Thank you for keeping us on point.
Judith is the best.
Just before we start our topics today, an RIP for Charles Krauthammer, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist and pundit who helped shape, sometimes dissented from conservative movement. He was 68. His death was announced yesterday. He publicly said a year ago he was being treated for a cancerous tumor. And succumbed yesterday. Krauthammer credited with coining the term the Reagan Doctrine for President Reagan's policy of aiding anti-communist movements worldwide. He was a leading advocate for the Iraq War and a prominent critic of President Obama, whom he praised for his first-class intellect and first-class temperament, but denounced for having a highly suspect character. But he was also a never-Trumper. And he said this, he said, quote, I used to think Trump was an 11-year-old, an undeveloped schoolyard bully, he wrote in August 2016. Around the time Trump officially became the Republican nominee, he goes on and says, I was off by about 10 years. His needs are more primitive, an infantile hunger for approval and praise, a craving that can never be satisfied. Also,
he was Jewish.
Really?
Was he?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, he was Jewish.
Yeah. Yes.
And when Trump Observant. Said he was the best Christian that anybody would ever know, Krauthammer said, hell, I'm Jewish, and I'm a better Christian.
He was also, I didn't realize this, but he was recruited to write speeches for Walter Mondale when yeah. he was vice president.
Huh. He was a liberal. He started off at the New Republic, right? And
yeah.
he wrote for the Washington Post and started on the liberal side.
Wasn't he a medical doctor
he
early
sure
in
was.
His career?
He was.
And then
he was.
Shifted to writing.
And of course, the thing we haven't mentioned is that he spent his life in a wheelchair, extraordinarily overcoming, you know, what most people would have been put out by.
And completed that the accident that that put him in a wheelchair happened while he was in medical school, and he completed medical school on time with his class.
Hmm. So R.I.P. Krauthammer, always an interesting and kind of frank perspective on many things.
I'm glad you mentioned, Ray, just that he was a big Never Trumper. And I think a lot of people who, you know, we all curate our news, the people who don't, who talk about Fox News, for example, but don't really listen to it, I think you would be surprised at how many people on Fox News are kind of appalled that Trump is president. And Krauthammer was one of them. Chris Wallace is another one. Dana Perino is another.
I wish there were more, though.
There's a lot.
They're in the minority. You may be surprised to learn that sometimes I tune into Fox News, and it's bizarre.
When? Let me ask you. When do you turn?
In the evening.
Okay, so in the evenings, actually, when you get into, you know, Hannity and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, during the day, you know, or on the Sundays, you know, Krauthammer was, like I say, Krauthammer, Wallace, Perino, what's the guy? Shep
Smith.
Yeah, you know they're all they're you know pretty vehemently anti-Trump.
So I'm so sorry.
They're still conservatives.
This very interesting conversation between the two of you. But I did want to ask whether it's possible, Rich, because a lot of people follow you on the radio. They want to know what's this guy all about. You know, who is he? And so my question to you is, since you're you. And so, the fact that, you know, you're saying there are these conservatives who basically are never Trumpers, it leads me to ask you the question, are you one of them?
I am not. I still endorse Trump. I like him, and I'm still a conservative. But, you know, my point was that people like Krauthammer and certainly had the intellectual
But props, you said it right? So admiringly that I thought maybe you included yourself in that
you
group.
You know why? Because he was so openly appalled by Trump, but he was able to still sense the history or the momentousness of the election, you know, good or bad. You know, whereas everybody else just said, oh, my God, this just means the American populace is stupid and racist and deplorable and everything. And he was able to set that aside. He was appalled, but he was able to set it aside.
Imagine his sadness, though. He had such a career of great intellect and in his final days,
that didn't mean he was always right.
No, I know. I know. But he certainly was intelligent. I mean, I disagreed with him most of the time, but I think there was probably a profound sadness checking out during, during the when children are being separated at the border and the North Korea stuff.
Trade wars.
I bet you he was mighty displeased.
He probably was, but he was. If you ever read his book, he's very as you might guess, just an optimistic person. You know, somebody. So I think he would be somebody. You know, he felt like, you know, America's still, you know, ascending. And even though this might be a low point for a lot of people.
But there is another question. Since we know that the Republican Party
keep going
is so devoted to Trump.
Oh, I don't think so.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
if you take a look at the polls and you see 79% of the Republicans are enthusiastic about Trump.
Oh, you're talking the voters. I thought you meant the elected. Because I feel like having terrible trouble
cobbling together
a coalition.
Right, I was going to say there seems to be a fissure within the Republican Party now, and it just seems to be getting deeper.
Those guys are sitting there in the Congress talking to each other, whispering in each other's ears and saying how terrible Trump is, but that they're scared to death.
They're cowards.
They're cowards. They're scared to death of being, you know, primaried, and we have seen that in fact is happening because of that very electorate you're talking about here, Rich.
Yeah, you're right. They're cowards, Judith, and Trump called them out as much as any. You know, during the Obamacare debate, you know, he was the one who said, you know, I thought you guys wanted to change this, and nobody's voting in favor of it.
Well, I just want to say that I don't think Paul Ryan or many congressional Republicans can no longer say with a straight face that they believe in family values. The next time they say that, someone has to call them on it, because you don't let the atrocity on the border happen. You don't elect a sexual predator as president. You can, they did, but then you can't stand up and say you are committed to family values.
And that's the surprising thing is the evangelicals are still backing. So when you look at, aside from politicians, but, you know, special interest groups, that they still stand behind Trump through all of this, which is really remarkable. And it makes you question how deeply they hold their principles.
Right. Next time they attack a gay person, I've had it with their family values.
Yeah, but, you know, they'll. You say that they won't be able to cite family values. They will. They will continue to cite family values because some of these words take on, you know, a sort of right-wing patina that is really code for their intolerance. So when they say family values, they don't really necessarily mean.
They mean family. A special type of family
values.
Well,
I think they never. I think it was actually never genuine. But I think considering the policies of this administration.
So no Republicans have any sort of moral family values at all.
I don't think.
No, I think
I don't
some
think
do.
Speaker Ryan can stand up and lecture the country on family values, given his congressional record of the past year and a half. I'm not saying all Republicans, but I am saying most Republicans in Congress who won't stand up to the anti-family policies
of
Trump.
Encouraging people to break the law and to involve their children in that breaking of the law and submit them to the vicissitudes of administrations, you think that shows family values?
I think accepting people who are seeking asylum status and not separating children, which has never been done before, is family values.
Well, that's besides the fact that that's incorrect. It has been done before.
Note, there's a legal decision in the Flores case that you're not to separate children from parents when they're entering the country over immigration issues. You certainly can if it's other situations like drunk driving or
arresting,
abuse
or
of
arresting
children,
the parents.
But not you cannot. This has never happened before in terms of parents seeking asylum and having their children taken away from them.
I agree with that statement, but that statement conflates two things that are going on that mixes too many things. First of all, the people whose children are being separated from them are not people who are seeking asylum. The only way you could, if you listen to all what's been going on, the only way you could seek asylum is at a port of entry. We're talking about people who are crossing illegally, not at a port of entry. So that takes that argument out of it. So I agree with you to the extent you say people seeking asylum, we have not separated families.
It's not,
and I would argue
it's not
we
just
still
people,
aren't.
It's not just people at port of entry. Rich, we have 2,300 children that are still in custody, essentially imprisoned. We've never had that
because
numbers before. This is the Trump zero tolerance policy.
I agree that this is a result of the zero tolerance policy toward starting to actually arrest people for the crime of crossing the border.
Misdemeanors, right?
It's still a crime.
Misdemeanors, okay. And you typically are not detained and have your child taken away. Imagine if everyone in this country who's committed a misdemeanor having their children taken away from them.
Well, first of all, you know, there are a lot of people getting their children taken away from them in this country, you know, and it's interesting that on this issue people have gotten up in arms, and I don't hear people saying the same thing about all the people who unfortunately, and I would argue in similar circumstances, are, for example, victims of, you know, maybe drug abuse or opioid addiction. And yes, I understand there's some fault there, and I'm not, but those people are losing their children as well, and I don't know that they're morally worse, for example, than the people who are you know, trying to come across the border. But, you know, my original question was if whether you think that shows an embracing of family values to embark upon an illegal venture, knowing and involving your children in it, knowing that, you know, this is one of the possible things that could happen.
Well,
okay. So I don't want to shift too much away from that, but going back to one of Trump's main campaign assets was that he's a businessman. He's going to use deal making or whatever. This is probably one of the best examples of the worst management of a major issue in the 21st century. I mean, this is atrocious. You know, the Department of Homeland Security is getting different directives than ICE, and Trump says, "Well, I can't issue an executive order to fix this," and then a day later he does it. And nobody seems to know what's going on, and that is not good management. Like, forget about good politics and family values.
Well,
that is not good management.
I think
so,
we all agree on that.
Yeah, no, disagreement on that.
I don't think there's any disagreement that it's terrible, except I think the basic premise may be faulty, and that is that this is a president who relies on chaos. He loves chaos. He loves multiple orders coming from multiple places. We may think that
there's... But that's bad management.
No, that's what you say. And I'm saying that in his mind, the guy who has acceded to be the, let's see how we put this, the president of the United States, he thinks this works for him. And I'm not going to be the one to argue. I'm going to argue how terrible he is, of course, as all of you might, or as three of us might. But I am not going to think for a second that he doesn't have a philosophy of organized chaos that helps him get what he wants.
That's true.
And by the way, his polls are going up.
That might help him get what he wants, but that is not the effective management of a nation, which is what the president is legally obligated to do.
I'll tell you what, let's leave it there. This was very organic today. We morphed from the obituary for Charles Krauthammer right into topic one, which is President Trump and immigration and Congress and their dangling and who knows what they will do. And we'll set this up again after the news, and then we'll start this conversation fresh. It's the roundtable panel.
What kind of news?
BBC News?
You always say British news.
The Brit news. Rich Honan, Aaron Pasitti, Alan Chartok, Judith Henk, me, Ray Graff. We'll be back.
Somebody hold me too close. Somebody hurt me too deep. Somebody sit in my chair and ruin my sleep and make me aware.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It is a fabulously gorgeous Friday morning, and we'll do our best to rain on your parade. It's the Roundtable panel. 9:34 is the time, and we're joined today by Alan Chartok, Rich Honan, Judith Henk, and Aaron Pasitti. And you can always weigh in. Panel at WAMC.org is the email address. Let's do a few letters, and then we'll get back to the topic at hand.
I just want to say I could not dance to that music.
No.
And I feel like I can dance to just about anything.
I danced to the BBC News. Sadly, we've seen it.
Yes. I didn't say well.
Bernard in Burnt Hills has written us this letter.
Bernie in Burnt Hills.
Yes, right. Nice. It says, could the panel speak to how definitions of liberal and conservative have changed in the past 2 years? I'm a liberal, but not hard left. One could be conservative, but not hard right. Do you think liberals and conservatives have more in common than they actually think? Might we be defining ourselves by what the media says instead of actually talking to each other? Well, Bernard, I think in Burnt Hills, I think we'll leave it at that. Otherwise we won't have another 4 hours to do this in an academic,
economists going back to like the 19th century, like Adam Smith and John Stuart Mill, argued that conservative positions were liberal because it's focused on liberty and these are somewhat libertarian values. So liberals did have a more conservative connotation in terms of government regulation and so on. Yeah. And then even Milton Friedman called himself a classical liberal.
Okay, yeah, so we're not leaving.
Okay, I'm finished. All right, I'll leave it at that.
Save that for the classroom,
Professor.
Sir. Renee.
Well, he asked the question.
Renee, we're definitely getting
into Phillips curve later.
Asylum. Dear panel, someone on NPR pointed out recently that many Central American migrants are functionally illiterate, and do not know how to enter a legal point of entry. They are, in fact, seeking asylum and have not navigated their entry according to the, quote, proper protocol. Shame on this administration for their lack of competence and immortality. Immorality.
Let's hope it's not immortality.
Well, the real problem is how are these parents going to get their children back now that the kids are being sent to 13 different states? And they have just, you know, a federal judge remarked yesterday that if you go to jail, you get a receipt when they take your wallet. But there's no paper trail for these children who've been separated, and there are obviously language issues. And, you know, just think about this image. There was a New York One report of a group of young girls brought to Harlem to a social service agency. And imagine they're essentially in prison for how long, separated from their parents, put on a plane, probably the first time they've ever been on a plane, and then they're in Harlem at 2 a.m. brought into an office building.
Without telling the mayor and without telling the governor and without telling the health officials in New York. You know, I'm not a big Andrew Cuomo fan. I guess everybody's figured that out. However, I have to say, he's right about
yes,
all of this.
Absolutely.
He's right on the money. He says the state constitution says that they're in charge of health facilities and they have to be informed of all of this.
And some of the kids were brought to New York City public hospitals yesterday with asthma, obviously with depression. I mean, if you got to have a kid with asthma, you know, you're terrified when you don't have the nebulizer with you. So just imagine the trauma for these children and their parents.
I just don't understand. I agree with you, and I agree. I again agree with Aaron again about this was rolled out, you know, in a particularly incompetent way. But I don't understand. I'm not saying yes or no. I just don't understand this whole when illegal immigrants are in the country now, and then they kind of get dispersed all over. Mm-hmm. And I got to believe somebody's making money somewhere, right? I have to believe that somebody, probably the federal government, is paying the state governments to, you know, if they're in DSS facilities or something. I have to believe there's money flowing, but I just don't understand that whole concept of let's take these people and disperse them. It sure makes catch and release even harder. And I don't understand the whole thing. Don't use that phrase.
That's really, because they're people. They're not fish. It's a very offensive. I mean, I can respectfully disagree with you on lots of things, Rich, but please don't use that phrase.
What's the phrase? Catch and release for people.
But your point is what happens when they disperse around the country.
What I'm saying is look at the size of the infrastructure of this industry that has, whether you call it enabling, whether you call it supporting, whatever you want to call it, of these, you know, hundreds of thousands of people coming across the border. And we're not even talking about, by the way, the 40 or 50% of people who come legally and overstay their visas. Right. That's a whole other issue. But the infrastructure of this problem is huge, and there's a lot of money there. And I'm not understanding how it is that someone's going to be able to cut through all of that.
Do you think Andrew Cuomo is a liar? I mean, he says he doesn't know. He said nobody informed him.
Wasn't
nobody
he
informed
an illegal immigrant?
What'd you say?
Isn't he an illegal immigrant now, Andrew Cuomo? Didn't he make that statement? Am I wrong on this one? Didn't he say if you're going to take the illegal immigrants, take me?
It's part of his speech.
My answer is good. Take them.
I see. Okay.
But on your point of the infrastructure, the social service agencies that are placing children, a lot of them are run by Catholic charities. Yeah. And for years, they've been placing real unaccompanied minors, usually teenagers that mm-hmm. come into this country. The challenge now is they've got much younger children, including infants and toddlers, with no medical records, no idea who they are, and they're overwhelmed.
And what about the military bases? That's what we're hearing now.
Yes, that's coming up.
They want 20,000 kids put into these military bases.
Well, look,
that's extraordinary, especially since we have federal judges saying no more than 20 days. Remember that?
Right. Well, it's a legally binding settlement, the Flores decision, no more than 20 or 21 days. And so I think that'll be challenged and be tossed. But the Trump administration has told military bases to make space for 20,000 people.
Okay, let's go on with the letters, if it's all right with you. Richie says, legal border crossing. I always thought that presenting oneself at the border and asking for refugee status was and is legal. If so, taking children from people who do this is tantamount to kidnapping. Stop saying crossing the border illegally when referring to people seeking asylum. And that's from Richie in Greenwich.
He's right, except that he's right, except that you're supposed to do it at a port of entry and not in a covert way. And if you do it at a port of entry, yes, there's a number of rights that attach to you. It's difference between there's also a different status between being a refugee and seeking asylum, and so he's right to that extent. But it you can't do that in an unpoliced way across a 2,000-mile border.
Jack said today's tweet, "Hello panel of panels." This morning, Trump tweeted that the attempt to forge a congressional compromise on immigration should be dumped in favor of an all-out campaign in November. Look past the immediate border issues and recognize that Trump is only trying to add sharks to his moat. The White House is his fortress, and the Republicans are his most promising sharp-toothed phalanx. And as impeachment approaches, Republicans win. No impeachment. No impeachment. Jack from Ghent.
So, you know, in terms of the economic aspect of immigration, before I get to that, the broader issue is that there could be some type of sensible immigration reform. And I think Democrats and Republicans both largely agree on that in terms of—
The president's tweet this morning was give up, don't even try.
But—
Ryan was trying to pass a bill this week.
But I bet they get zero Democratic votes for the bill that they try and do next week, the so-called moderate vote.
Oh, no, you're right.
The moderate bill. They will get zero Democratic votes. So, Aaron, I'm not sure I agree with your assumption, but go ahead.
I mean, a lot of businesses, especially the agricultural industry, relies on illegal immigrant labor that is paid sub-minimum wages off the books, and that's why we get our food so cheap. Mm-hmm. So, you know that. Yes, that's the point, is that there is argument for sensible immigration reform that doesn't involve exploiting workers who come here, threatening them, making them frightened to ask for better working conditions and so on. The other issue is that the U.S. economy faces two really long-term hurdles, and one is a declining labor force participation, meaning we have an aging population where there's going to be less working-age people, and slowing productivity growth. So— either we just accept slower growth, slower wage growth.
You said productivity growth.
I'm getting to productivity growth in a second. So we either accept that as the new norm of just we're going to have an economy that limps along with fewer workers, older workers who have lower productivity growth. And since immigrants provide usually a younger workforce, that it solves the worker problem. And younger workers tend to be have higher productivity rates than older workers. So immigration solves two of the long-term problems the U.S. economy is facing, and I really haven't heard that enter the debate, and it's an extreme amount of ignorance on both parties' parts to not figure out a sensible approach to deal with, you know, the economic issues, let alone the moral issues, which is what we've been talking about.
Moving on. Keith writes a letter like the last one we got, and I can already see what Rich is going to say about this, which is, when did it become a rule that you can only ask for asylum in a port of entry? You're supposed to present yourself to the law enforcement officer and ask for safe harbor. These asylum seekers are turning themselves into law enforcement officers and having their children taken from them. Rich, did you want to...
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if that's what is going on
or
not.
Some of the people who are being brought over by the coyotes and others obviously are not presenting themselves to anybody. So there is a certain logical issue here. Yes.
Let's just take a quick break here. It is 9:45. It's Friday morning. It's the roundtable panel. Judith Enck, Rich Honan, Aaron Pasiti, Alan Shartok, and you at panel at WAMC.org.
And don't forget... To join us for the live broadcast of the Roundtable Panel on Wednesday, June 26th, all you got to do is go to WAMC.org and sign up, but you must do that.
Velvet, I can wish you for the color of your coat and fortune smiling all along. But more I cannot wish you than to wish you find your love, your own true love.
The lovely voice of Audra McDonald, who will be at Tanglewood on Sunday at 2:30 p.m. It's the Roundtable Panel, and we're having a really ripping time today. Aaron Pasiti is here, Judith Enck, Rich Honan, and Alan Shartok. The email address is panel at WAMC.org, and since the emails seem to be following the general topic arc of the day, what do you say we keep going with the letters?
You're the boss, Ray.
Yeah, really?
Oh, yes, you are.
Can I give myself a raise?
Can you sign my check?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. You're fired, Shartok.
Anna Marie says, seeking asylum. Rich, one of the reasons that people seeking asylum aren't coming over the border is related to the fact that Border Patrol has been instructed to stop people before they reach the border. The asylum seeker must have 2 feet in the country to request asylum. Therefore, they are finding other ways to enter the country. And that's from Al. It says Al. Oh, no, A-L, which is Anna Marie, and then her last name.
Okay.
All right. Kathy says, state-sponsored kidnapping. Panel. So the finances of the state sponsoring kidnapping and abuse policy, send the people back, costs what, a couple hundred per family? Arrest and separate housing, food, and transportation, $700 per day per person, not to mention court costs. Who profits? New York Times reports this is a multi-billion dollar business.
Right. Yeah.
What's going on with Mueller?
That's not coming from, that's the New York Times. That's not coming from my side. So
this is different than the social service agencies. This is the large military subcontractors who are getting contractors to run those big tent cities and things like that.
The state facilities are getting money as well, right? I mean, it's...
I mean, how can you have a governor, Rich, who says this morning that he knew nothing about these people coming? These are his agencies.
The state facilities are pre-existing social service agencies that do foster care and things like that. I don't think...
But they get
Catholic
compensated.
Of course they do, but I don't think Catholic Charities can be compared to... it's either... Lockheed Martin or Northrop Grumman. It's some military subcontractors that are running the facilities that are holding the children on the border.
And I wasn't casting aspersions on either the agencies, private or public. I was just saying part of this problem, I'm starting to, because we all sit around and say, okay, we all agree that something needs to be done. We all agree there needs to be some kind of regulation. We'll argue about what that should be. Some type of security, some type of tracking, health, the whole thing. And I'm wondering, why doesn't it get done besides politics? And usually the answer is because there's billions of dollars flowing to lots of people who are making a lot of money today on this crisis, right?
Well, you should be casting aspersions on the new military subcontractors who are running these border facilities, but not on the mostly nonprofit social service agencies that have been around for decades.
Okay, so Kathy says, we did that. We did, Kathy. Okay, yeah, we did that. And now Mark says, Rich, you support Trump, and I'm glad you're on the panel. So please explain how you look past the 1,001 things that the rest of us despise Trump for and can never support. You seem like a smart guy. He is, by the way, folks. Help us understand this.
Well, first, I can't look past all of them, okay? I don't look past everything. And second, I do what I do with most things in business, which is I filter out a lot of the talk. And I focus on what actually gets done or doesn't get done. And I think, in my opinion, once you filter out the talk and the tweets and all those things on both sides, I take more good out of the things that have been done than bad. I understand that you guys philosophically disagree with that, but I don't forgive everything Trump says. I certainly don't agree with everything he says, but a lot of the things that he does to me seem very simple, and this is one of them. This is the theme of the Trump presidency, or one theme of the Trump presidency, has been him taking on issues, often in a clumsy and bombastic way, but him taking on issues that have not been taken on over the immigration issue, just as an issue, has not really been taken on. You know, the trade, you know, the tariffs has not been taken, not all of them, but some of them.
Okay.
But if you look at not the rhetoric, but the outcome, you know, the Muslim travel ban, you know, blocking entire people because of their religion from entering the country. That's a substantive thing.
Which is not what it was.
It's exactly what it was.
That's
why he's losing in court, because he himself said it was a Muslim travel ban. The S-hole country comment.
Right.
I didn't say the word.
Okay. So you said something else other than what you were saying. Okay.
No.
We're good.
Ray came to life.
Yeah, no. Ray finally started listening.
And his hand was moving towards the red button.
Yes, I was going towards the dump button.
I've never seen you more alarmed.
Really?
And then
you're a little slow at the beginning of the program, though.
Yeah. You're right.
What you said was right, but just be careful.
And, okay. But, and my final point is we're coming on the one-year anniversary of the situation in Charlottesville, Virginia, with the white supremacists. So
to say nothing, I'm sorry, Judith, for interrupting, of your topic, which is this world is going to burn up.
Right, that too. All of the environmental rollbacks. These are substantive things that are affecting the world and people. It's not just the tweets. It's not just the rhetoric. It's actual policies that are hurting the planet and people.
But let's not forget that President Clinton and President Obama had their own failures as well. I mean, Obama had a once-in-a-lifetime chance to crack down on the size and power of the financial industry and make it more stable. And he just bowed to financial interest and blew it and had lobbyists write the Dodd-Frank Act. It's an atrocity.
No comparison. No comparison.
How is that not a comparison?
Because he didn't repeal the Dodd-Frank Act. The Dodd-Frank Act is far from perfect, but there was an effort to right the economy.
But the point is that the banks that he was saying were too big to fail are now even bigger than they were before and are now.
And what about the auto industry that was saved by the federal bailout?
Okay. I'm not saying nobody's going to be perfect, but remember Clinton was the one who drastically changed how the welfare system worked. It went from aid to families with dependent children to temporary assistance for needy families. So there's a lot. I mean, that's immoral in my book.
Wait, before no something much more important has happened. It turns out Wednesday is June 27th and not June 26th.
Ah, so this is the event that the live WAMC roundtable.
Right.
So we had the date wrong and whether it was morning or evening. But other than that, we're all over this, folks. We'll see you there.
Can I make a shameless plug about June 27th?
Yes.
My bluegrass band is playing at the Argyle Tasting Room in Cambridge, New York at 6:30 p.m. So you can go to this show and then come see us for free at the Argyle Tasting Room in Cambridge, New York.
You're not a banjo player, are
you? Yes, he is.
I play banjo.
Oh, you got to get out.
But I play guitar in this band, so can I stay?
All right, your guitar is all right.
6:30 p.m., Wednesday the 27th.
We only have one banjo player allowed per studio at any given time.
I mean, that's a good policy.
And there are those people who think maybe that I don't qualify.
Well, I think you qualify.
Okay,
well,
maybe so Ray and I
maybe we
show
add up,
up
to a whole banjo player.
Here we go. Daniel says, Rich.
Daniel.
Doesn't know if folks coming across the border are morally worse than drug addicts. Where to begin with that deeply troubling statement? I have much more concern about the morality of Trump supporters than I do about illegal immigrants and people struggling with addiction.
He didn't exactly say that.
That is so not what I said. Yeah, what I said was, I said people lose their children coming across the border. People lose their children as a result of their drug problems. And I was saying, and I wasn't sure that one was morally better or worse than the other. I said that still it's people who are in circumstances.
Yeah. So clarified.
Hmm.
Okay, now
still not good.
Yeah.
Right. Why not?
Because I think if parents are struggling with addiction and can't take care of their children, there's a social service institution in place to remove children, and often they're placed with grandparents, with aunts and uncles. Or in foster care if family members can't step up. The children being separated at the border are being handled totally different.
Right.
They're not being temporarily taken away and family members are sought. They're essentially being imprisoned. And if we had 2,300 kids from the Capital District taken away in that fashion, there would be outrage.
And if there are 2,300 families who engaged in conduct that put their children at risk, would we not be similarly outraged?
But there's a big difference between drug-addicted parents who were unfit to take care of their children and people that are seeking asylum.
I wasn't putting blame on either one. I was saying that
it was a false equivalence.
No, it wasn't, because it's still people who, through life circumstances, are in a situation where their children are being taken away against what they want to have happen. All right, and this happens all the time in America, and I don't hear as much of the outrage as what has happened here. And I'm not saying, are you saying the people in America who lose their kids because of drug abuse are somehow more morally culpable than someone who's trying to come across
the
border?
No, but their kids aren't thrown in cages indefinitely.
Julia says, wrong problem. Rich, illegal schlemiegel. They're breaking the law. And that justifies everything you do, question mark?
No.
Ever think that maybe the existing law just isn't very just? What about justice?
Gee whiz, Julio, why don't we fix the law the way every president has been saying since, I don't know, Clinton? Actually, since Reagan, right? Since Reagan, you know, remember when Reagan granted amnesty, at the time Reagan said this will be one of, this problem's going to get out of control. You know how many illegal immigrants there were then? 1.7 million. Now there's 13 million. Everybody's been grappling with this problem. I agree with her. Let's try and fix it.
And Marianne says, tired of Rich's deflection. I listen every morning, but this is the first time I've written. I respect the fact that you have Rich on the panel for balance, but I am sick and tired of his lawyerly tactic of, but what about this deflection? To me, this is not an honest debate.
No, but those are important points, I think. I mean, getting down to the subtle, I mean, you can...
They're important, but they're wrong.
No, but the point about the deflection from Rich is something that he and I duke out from time to time. I mean, I think it's right. You say that somebody did something wrong, and he says, well, what about all the other people who did something wrong?
Well, is not the legal system based on precedent?
What, president or precedent?
Precedent.
Okay, in this case, it's precedent. But I have to say, in this case, it's just a difference in the way we approach the problem. You can't say because somebody else has done something wrong that the guy is doing something wrong now.
Like two
okay.
wrongs don't make a right sort
that's
of thing?
That's right. That's exactly
what
they
used to say in school.
That's what I say all
Thank
the time.
Thank you, Ray.
Yes.
What kind of stuff do you have on your ears? Okay.
Those are my headphones. Those are my COS Pro AA headphones. It helps me screen people out when I don't want to listen to them.
Shayna.
Have you noticed he wears them all the time, even when he's not in the booth?
Yes.
Shayna says, removing children comparison. Good morning. One of the most infuriating comparisons that I've heard during this crisis is that children are taken away from parents. You know why I'm reading so fast? Because it's such a long letter.
And we have to go to news.
Here in our country. That's right.
Yeah, hurry up.
Okay, so that's all I'm going to say. The children from the border are afforded no such rights. What rights?
All right.
Okay, have a great day, Shayna.
So there's a lot of contention today, and I thought maybe for the last half hour we would just play ZZ Top Records. What do you think?
Share, ladies and gentlemen.
Right, all right, we'll come back and talk. Alan Chartok is here, Aaron Presidi, Rich Honan, and Judith Enk, and you at panel at WAMC.org. We'll break for news and be back.
I am what I am. I am my own special creation.
Welcome back to the roundtable. What are you laughing about?
I'm laughing at you.
Welcome back to the roundtable. That was Audra McDonald, six-time Tony Award winner, who will be at Tanglewood with the Boston Pops on Sunday at 2:30 p.m. And this is the roundtable panel. Good panel today, relatively speaking. Rich Honan is here, Judith Enk, Aaron Presidi, and Alan Chartok. And the email address is panel at WAMC.org. Stack of letters there, Uncle Alan. Let's keep going.
Okay. Russell says, a question for Alan and the rest of the panel. If President Trump does indeed love chaos, why do you believe this is true? For what purpose? What good does he believe will accrue from the chaos? Well, you have to assume a couple of things here. First of all, that he wants something good to accrue from it. What's good for him is that he's president of the United States and that it has worked for him. And that he never puts a button on his lip and he calls all kinds of people, including people in his own party, terrible names and all of the rest of it. And he thinks this is the way you get ahead. And he doesn't really care about anything else. That's my answer. Anybody else?
I've got two thoughts on that. One is that okay, so you could argue that part of the chaos is intentional, like threatening an international trade war because it really upends 40 years of, you know, economic policy, and everybody understands how risky that is, and that is a legitimate bargaining point. So you can say, like,
okay,
I'm willing to press the button and, you know, go all in on this, and that at least gives him some leverage in that. But I think part of the chaos is that it keeps him in the news, and that satisfies his base narcissism.
Also, he's—I'm sorry, you're
no,
done.
That was it.
He's also worried about the midterm elections. He's reading the polls like everyone else, and he knows that Democrats are energized. This Tuesday, by the way, is primary voting day across the state for federal office, and I think he wants to energize his base. And his go-to issue is always immigration and racism.
Yep. Okay, so Marjorie says, two questions for Rich.
Oh, boy.
I'm surprised.
What's up, Marge? Only two?
What's up, Marge? Okay, great. Greetings, pal. Always interesting when Rich is on, even if crazy making. Rich, what would you do if your family is being threatened daily by gangs trying to recruit your children and threatening to hurt the family if the boy doesn't join? Just one of the many horrible scenarios we hear about. Would you sit tight or try to get the heck out? You equate these misdemeanors with someone having their children taken away because of opiate misuse. Those people, I would say, are endangering their children if they are taking opiates while caring for their children while the migrants are trying to help theirs. And that's from Marjorie.
I don't put as much culpability on, and maybe I just look at this differently. I think the drug abuse is as much, I'm one of the people who thinks it's as much a disease as a crime. All right. So I understand this criminal culpability, but especially with opiates, just because of the way it starts off with legal drugs taken in a legal way. And then it's difficult to generalize. But I don't see that as a level of culpability that, you know, that you see in other crimes.
But I
would say to her, I would try and get my family to safety. But I would also try and do that in as safe a way as I possibly could. My other question to her would be,
Marge,
I don't know the answer to this. What kind of rhetoric, what kind of communications is filtering through in Honduras and in Guatemala and in, you know, Salvador, right? And as they make their way through Mexico, which, by the way, is not a short trip, like, what are they being encouraged? Are they being disinformed? Are they, you know, what's being said to these people? Because something is galvanizing this.
Well, I think the short answer is that they are hearing from others who have made it, who are doing better here.
Well, they're not walking through Mexico with cell phones and iPads. They're fleeing terrible situations in Central America. And I think what's missing from the Trump policy is what is best for these children. Because lots of parents make bad decisions every day, but you don't punish children.
Can I ask you an inflammatory question?
Yes, please.
Where do you put the question of what's best for America? Is that above that question? Is that even with that with your question? Is that below your question?
I think what's best for children worldwide is my priority. In terms of, you know, the general phrase, what's best for America? Well, what part of America? But I think if you are in elected or appointed office and you're working in this immigration field and thousands of children's lives are at risk, you have to know what your bottom line is. And your bottom line should be what is best for these children.
See, and I hear that. But I come down the other way on that, which is I think if you're an unelected official, if you're an activist, if you're somebody, then I think you should have.
No, I'm talking about you're the head of HHS, you're Kirstjen Nielsen, you're President Trump.
I feel like
you have to put what is best for the children front and center in your decision making.
What if, and I know we're talking about generalities, what if you determine that what is best for children worldwide is sometimes inconsistent with what is best for America, world, you know,
but I think
in a general way, isn't it your duty? Isn't it your sworn obligation to go with what is best for America to the extent there's an inconsistency?
Well, but for
immigration, what's best for immigrant families who come to the U.S. is what's best for the country. Immigrants are a net gain to the economy in every way.
I disagree, Aaron, because if we're going by what was best for immigrant families trying to make their way here, then we wouldn't have an incoming border, right? We would welcome them in.
You've seen the statistics, the number of immigrants that graduate from college with advanced degrees.
Right.
I mean, there's
businesses.
A lot of stereotyping going on here. The immigrant community is some of the best educated, hardest working cohort of our population. And so I think it's kind of a false choice.
Well, the legal immigrant community is a big part of that community.
Legal and illegal, both.
I think you're mixing things. But to answer your exact question, what's best for the family migrating? The best thing for them would be if they could walk in, be welcomed, become part of the system, become part of the safety. That would be best for them. I'm not convinced that's best. That's what's best for America. I'm not saying it's not, but I'm saying that they could be inconsistent.
That's not consistent with our the history of our nation.
That's
we do have the Statue of Liberty. We do have the Statue of Liberty. We have Ellis Island. People have come here from all over the world.
Legally, they came here legally. They fought really hard to get here. They went through extreme privations. They went through Ellis Island. They did all those things. They spoke a million different languages.
So you don't think illegal Mexican immigrants came in during that time?
No, I think there probably was, but my point is that's a really big distinction. Legal versus illegal. And I agree with you that the laws aren't working right, and I think we all agree the laws have to change.
Well, if we were, I'm going to concede your point just to keep this moving along, not your whole point at all.
I understand.
But let's say
it's for the sake of time.
Yeah, let's say parents made a choice to enter here illegally. You don't punish their kids by locking them in jail. That Walmart facility in Texas that is the major holding area. There are no windows there. Those kids are indoors for 22 hours out of 24 hours. Those children have done nothing wrong. We're talking about toddlers often. We're talking about infants who can't speak. Let's say, for sake of argument, their parent entered the country illegally. There's no reason to treat children that way. None. And it doesn't work as a deterrent because numbers are still up.
Well, and by the way, I did want to remind everybody we're having a live broadcast of the roundtable panel. It's in the morning, 8:30 a.m. at the Linda. All you have to do is go to WMC.org. You want to join us? By the way, you have to do it online, but a lot of people are doing it. Those tickets are going to be gone in no time at all. So don't be calling me up later, okay?
And there's a link on our website.
And don't worry, I will not be there. So
you can speak
freely.
You would be welcome. We always welcome diversity.
And it's Wednesday, June 27th. It's a live roundtable. Tickets are free, but you need to register, and it's a very limited number of tickets based on the interest level of our audience. You might want to move quickly on that. Go to WAMC.org.
Okay. And
look for the Eventbrite link.
And John.
Eventbrite, right.
Rich, that's taking a shot at somebody else's infirmity is not nice.
I'm afraid we've all done it.
Yeah. Okay. So here we go. Punishment should fit the crime. The situation with children being taken from their parents at the border reminds me of Les Miserables and Jean Valjean, who stole a loaf of bread out of desperation because he was starving and was sentenced to exile and hard labor for his minor crime. Parents desperate to remove their children from horrendous conditions at home walk hundreds of miles to secure safety and freedom. They should be applauded. Instead, for breaking our laws, they are punished in a way that is far harsher than their crime. And that's Jean in Albany. And then Rich Honan and Family Values comes the next letter from Ramon. Thank you again for having Mr. Rich Honan on the panel, explaining certain realities is often missing from the program. Please have him on more often. Well, he's always welcome here, but, you know, when you're making $1,000 an hour, you don't come very...
You make $1,000 an hour?
Sometimes. Oh, at least.
Rich.
I thought it was $3,000.
Yeah. Rich, can I borrow $1,000?
Please have them. And in Family Values, these are subjective and there are no universal truths regarding them. Many were considered as discrediting themselves for having family values by expanding definitions of marriage. Was it right or wrong to view them this way? Part of the problem on both sides of a divide is the notion that they alone hold protective, defined, universal truths, which modernity exposes as absurd. It's a way too long letter, Ramon, and that's all I'm going to read of it. Diane says, what Congress is trying to do to Social Security? Apparently, the U.S. Congress is trying to reduce Social Security and take money away from the health insurance while we are watching the various Trump atrocities. Yep. The elected representatives are doing everything they can to steal money from the people. Will you talk about this? Well, you've talked about it, Diane, and that's what's important. We thank you for that. Karen says, asylum statute. I urge your panel to read the definition of asylum in 8 U.S. Code section 1158-asylum-A1, authority to apply for asylum. Basically, any alien physically present in the U.S. arriving on the U.S. may apply for asylum, whether or not as a designated port arrival. Thank you, and that's from Karen.
And I might also add, you look at the legal definition of child abuse, and what is happening on the border fits that definition, mm-hmm. according to HHS.
And Samantha says, background context, hi panel, you guys able to give at least a bit of historical context for the unrest and dysfunction in Central America that has led to this migration peril that would lead a family to risk the journey with little children? I don't know. I know it will make a dent in the mind of a hardliner, but it's important to understand what has happened there and how it is connected to U.S. policy. And thank you from Samantha.
A big part of that is the war on drugs, where mm-hmm. supply eradication just raises the price of drugs that are coming in, and it enriches cartels, and they just are enabled by U.S. policy to finance a narco state. That's one of the reasons. Yeah. I mean, that's not everything, but that's a huge one.
And she's right. And look, the ultimate answer to all this, right, is making other to your point, Judith, is making other areas of the world safe for children, mm-hmm. for people, you mm-hmm. know, for commerce, for the mm-hmm. whole thing. It's just that we can't even fix kind of the symptom. And, you know, we're talking about fixing the disease. Yeah. But she's right on point with that. I mean, if you could change conditions or make conditions better and have people be able to stay where they are.
Now that
every
would
time
be
we
sensible.
Try to do, but every time we try
but,
to do
but,
that.
But is that even possible, Judith? I mean, I know that's where we want to go aspirationally.
But every time we try to do that, right? Every time we try to do that, somebody generally on your side of the aisle there, Rich, is going to complain that Americans have no business trying to make things better in other parts of the world. We have our own.
And I would argue that in El Salvador, we actually made it quite worse decades ago.
Sure.
And then don't forget, last week, the Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions, said that domestic violence and gang violence should no longer be reasons for asylum seekers.
Elio says, thank you. It is so refreshing your conservative point of view on the immigration crisis. Also, great to hear dialogue and respectful debate with name-calling or without, it says with, but it means without name-calling or accusations. Sometimes I regretfully hear and see too much too often on social media like Twitter. I'm a first-generation born American. My father came from Argentina 50 years ago legally, following the law, waiting his turn to become an American citizen. What bothers me the most is the more immigration but line and process cutting. We cannot be a nation if we don't have borders and laws. Thank you from Kingston, New York. Casey says, I believe Rich just said something I think is shared by many Trump supporters. They want to see something done about issues and don't seem to care if the attempt or solutions particularly succeed or apparently moral, as long as something is happening. Rich said he had problems with much of what Trump has done, but he gives him credit for trying. Our policy should be based on participation awards. Linda says, what is the news media in the Central American country saying about this Trump policy? I cannot believe that they aren't making their people aware that they would become separated from their children. That's a very interesting mm-hmm. point.
And that was my question. I actually wonder if they're saying to the contrary. I'm wondering if people are being encouraged, even in the face of this policy, to go. And I don't know the answer to that. I'm not saying they are. That would be interesting to know.
And Aaron says, thank God for Aaron. Thank God for Aaron. Nice. He sees part of the reason we have Trump is because we of Obama's failures. If we go back to another centrist after Trump without addressing the inequality where 60% of the population can't afford a $400 emergency, we will get a more competent maniac next time.
Amen.
Well, that's, for you to say amen when they start the letter by saying thank God for Aaron.
Well.
Is a little bit.
That's the point. Is that you've had stagnant wages, real wages for the middle class for the past 40 years, and that's going to breed a lot of discontent and a lot of thoughts about unconventional.
You know, Aaron, he's just giving you a hard time. You understand that, right?
Okay, Carol.
Double amen.
I'm not a lawyer, and I don't even expect to play one on TV or the radio, and I don't understand the nuances of the laws. How can we expect non-English-speaking people seeking refuge to know the rules of coming across the border for assistance and or safety? Thank you, Carol.
Okay, we have about 1 minute here.
Dear panel, I would appreciate it if the expert economist on the panel would discuss the trade deficit with China in light of the decades-long practice of U.S. corporations outsourcing jobs in China. Dear Rich Honan, your input will be appreciated as well.
All right. Well, that'll
Aaron,
have to be next
you got
time.
1 minute to
no,
explain.
No, you can't. You have less.
There's
than
no
that.
Way I can conquer that in
no.
1 minute.
You know what? This was
Amen.
Fun. Thank you to Rich Honan and Aaron Pasitti and Judith Ank for a spirited conversation and Alan Chartok
Two.
For Yeah, as well.
Oh, okay.
You did great.
We went from competent to good.
Yeah, I mean, it's
or fun.
Competent panel. Did
competent,
did good
to
job.
Fun. Thank you.
B plus.
That's
all
an
around.
Upgrade. We made progress.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And remember, there's a lot more to come on the round table, and we will get to it momentarily.